Let's say you called me up and asked me if we could change it to like a
Sure.
holiday, so I said,
Sure,
whatever, so I could
sure.
get to talk to him. Were you brought up in a very religious home? Did your parents keep kosher?
No, no, we did not keep kosher. See, my mother had this attitude that she, of course, she wouldn't do anything to despoil it for my grandparents, but my mother felt that things that were in the old days were not applicable to things today because you could boil things, you could boil dishes, you could boil, utensils. In the old days, you couldn't do all that well. But my mother felt that all these new things did away with that. No, we never kept a kosher home. But Mama did everything for all the holidays. The holidays were special to us. Our kitchen smelled so good. And I feel badly that I don't know how to do those things because I just didn't do them, I guess. But we had all the goodies for all the holidays, and we were immersed in, I would say we were immersed in Jewish history. It was very important, but we weren't fanatic or anything, but
Would you say that most of the people felt the same way your mother did? Of her acquaintances about keeping
no,
kosher, that sort of thing.
no.
She was unusual then for her
My
part.
mother was I think my mother was unusual. My aunt, I didn't keep kosher either. But I know some of the other women that were Mama's friends did keep kosher homes. No, I think my mother was a. I really think my mother was a very unusual person because. She wasn't a college graduate, and yet she knew everything that was going on. One time, two young girls came here. I think they were the Feinberg girls, or one of them, who was going to go to Syracuse or was going to go to college or something. And my two nieces, Mama's granddaughters, had gone to Syracuse, and they weren't home. This girl came to ask questions, and my mother answered all the questions. They couldn't get over it that Mama knew. See, Mama was very alert and very. Into everything, you know. I mean, her interest in just wasn't just cooking, washing, and that sort of thing. Mama helped Uncle Jake in the store. Mama did everything.
What kind of store did he did
Uncle
your
Jake had a
uncle
dry
have?
goods store at Second and Madison for about 50, almost 50 years, and we all we now our the next generation. From our children didn't ever do anything in the store, but my sister and I would always help out. We always did that. I mean, one thing about our family, everything, we did so many things as a group. And if somebody was running for politics, in politics, we were all in there pushing, working, and if somebody was doing something else, everybody was involved in it. We were always involved. Together in things and terribly interested in each other's, doings. So that made it really very, very nice.
Were you ever aware of any particular conflicts with, let's say, your uncle or your father working on the Sabbath and the women being upset about this? Because I know my grandmother, who was an immigrant, when I asked her, she said that, yeah, there was a conflict, but you couldn't do anything. They had to work on Saturday. And that, she was upset about it, but, what could you do?
No, I never felt that conflict at all.
Did they work on Saturdays?
Oh, sure. I'm sure Papa kept the store open on Saturdays. Uncle Jake, I know, kept the store open on Saturdays. But I never felt any conflict about it.
Nothing through your grandparents or anything like that.
Maybe I was too young. No, I don't think so. I think my grandparents, my grandfather, although being Orthodox, I'm sure, was also. And I think that's where Mama got him. He also was looking in the future all the time, just not living with the past all the time, but moving with the times. I think he, I remember him that. Oh, I have a lovely a little record that Rabbi Drews made one time on the air, and it was about Grandpapa, when Grandpapa and Grandmama came to this country. It was just before Hanukkah. And Mama had told the rabbi this story that their things weren't really unpacked yet, and so they couldn't get the candelabra out for Hanukkah. So they lined up the children, and Grandpapa. I do remember that, you know, they'd give us a gold coin for Hanukkah, and he always said a prayer, you know, would hold us over our head and say a prayer for each one. That I remember. I must have been a very little girl then. But Rabbi told that story one time on the radio, and I have a little record of it, getting kind of worn out. But I don't remember any conflicts at all. Our family was allowed to do a lot of thinking, you know. Nobody put the damper on them and say, you shouldn't do this. I remember my father thought it was terrible to play cards. Mm. Now, he wasn't religious or anything like that, but he thought, my mother didn't. My mother didn't think anything about it, you know. But my father didn't think it was good to play cards. Isn't that funny?
At any time?
Any time. Mm. Isn't that funny?
That's strange.
But Mama used to sit and play solitaire a lot by herself. Yeah.
Do you ever remember his reprimanding her?
No. Oh, well, she didn't do it those days. She was too busy those days. Oh. This was only when Mama got older and didn't have so much to do. Mama was too busy. She was, working for the temple, working for the Bicker Holum, helping Pop in the store. I remember we always had a maid, you know. And, but these ladies, and oh, I have to tell you that every Tuesday, Mom and Aunt Rosie, and they would take me, because I mustn't have been in school yet, to the Garrick, either the Garrick or the Opera House. Mm-hmm. I forget which one. And we used to sit up in the balcony. It was like for 10 cents you got up in the balcony. And I was in the Opera House the other night for the first time in many, many, many years. And I went to see that. I was invited to go see that opera. And I know it was the Opera House where we used to go every week to see The Pearls of Pauline. My goodness, a silent film. And always Pauline was left on the rail, tied to the railroad tracks with the train coming on. And so you had to go back next week to see what was going on. But every Tuesday they went. That was their thing, every Tuesday. But Mama went to all the lectures. I mean, you know, and I tell you what else we used to go to. This is interesting, isn't it? I remember going with Mama. I don't know if Rosal went too, but I remember going with Mom up to Philadelphia to the Ethical Society to hear the lectures up there. Mm-hmm. There was the Ethical Society up in Philadelphia. It's right near Rittenhouse Square. I remember that building because a couple of times I've gone by and I thought, well, that's the building we used to go in to hear the lectures. So, and then Mom and Uncle Jake, many, many years ago, used to walk from Wilmington out to Arden for one day a year when they used to have the Henry George Day. And Mom and Uncle Jay used to walk out here from at that time we were at 94 West Street. Can you imagine that?
Walk.
But see, they were always vitally interested in everything. You know, it was wonderful, I think.
What was the Ethical Society?
It's some kind of, you know, I think it's still in existence today, and I don't know much about it. But they would have lectures, and I think it's a religion that's based on, I don't know if, you know, what I'm saying, whether it's right or not. Well, it must be a religion, kind of a religion based on ethical values. I don't know. You find out more about it, because I don't know. I just remember going up there, and I wasn't that young when I went up there. I would say I must have been like 14 years, you know, around that age. I was a young girl then.
Well, you mentioned that your family was, you know, very religious about the holidays and everything. Was it more of a family home-based religion, or did you go to temple a lot?
Well, we did. We went to temple a lot.
So it was both.
Every Friday night. And I can tell you, this is why I tell you why my mother was very smart. I was young then, but you know, not really young, but I mean in my early teens, I guess. And Mom and Aunt Rosie and I would go with them every Friday night to temple. But my mother was so smart because, you know, I wasn't that interested in the sermons at that point. And I knew that after the services, we walked on Delaware Avenue past the Martha Washington candy store, mm-hmm. and Mom always gave me 15 cents to go in and buy a quarter of a pound of Martha Washington in a bag, mm-hmm. and you got a lot in a quarter of a pound for a bag. So I, all through the sermon, I would be thinking, well, something nice is going to... See, my mother didn't have psychology, but she knew that if I could anticipate something, I could sit through something else, you know? Yes. So that was... But we went every Friday night. We were very devoted temple goers.
Your whole family, your father?
No, not my father. No, no, not my uncle. Not my uncles. Now, my uncle, Dr. Ostro, gave the art business there. But he was versed in Hebrew. He helped start the temple, too. He was very instrumental in that. And he was very well versed in Hebrew, believe it or not, and Latin, all sorts of things. He was had done a lot of studying. But no, we were very active in the temple. And the holidays were, you know, they were part of our life. Not that we made a big do about it, but we had the necessary foods that went with that holidays, and having going to Sunday school, we knew the whole story about it. But it wasn't like pounded into us or anything. It was just by like osmosis, we absorbed everything. But temple was a big part, very big part of our life.
Do you remember ever questioning why your father or your uncle didn't go that much?
No, but I consider them both very religious men. Mm-hmm. From the standpoint of ethics, mm-hmm. their ethical values were very, very high. I think if you'd asked anybody in town, that maybe they don't remember to this day, but business values were very, they were very ethical people. And I don't remember, Uncle Jake in the later years then would go for the high holidays. But Uncle Doc, who could read Hebrew and really was very involved, didn't go to the temple. They didn't go.
Even for the high holidays?
I don't remember Uncle Doc going for the high holidays. But I consider them all very religious people. I consider them all very, very definite Jewish people, you know. But
that's interesting.
But some people don't like organized, you know.
Oh, sure.
Some people do not like organized religion as such, you know. And I don't know why. Maybe the store was open on Friday. I'm sure Uncle Jake's store was open on Friday nights,
mm-hmm.
and they were always closed for the high holy days. And Papa's store must have been closed, you know, must have been open for the Friday night, so that it left the women to go. There were men. I remember in the early days there were men. Mr. Snellenberg always came to services. There were men that came, but there were more women that came to the services, I think, than men, mm-hmm. as I remembered. Of course, I won't trust my memory that strictly.
You had mentioned that, also during the holidays, you know, the good smells out of the mm-hmm. kitchen, that sort of thing, but then you said that you yourself didn't
know
how to, your mother never really took you in the kitchen and taught you to...
Well, when I was older, I was busy teaching all the time, you know. And I did hang around and a little bit, you know. But because Mama did it, then I didn't do it. And then by the time Mama died, the children were all grown up, and we didn't do it. You know, we didn't do it that much. And we didn't cook all the special things for the holidays. So that because my mother made the best apple pie in the whole city of Wilmington. Everybody used to say, Aunt Lizzie, you got any of your apple pie? And I used to know how to make it, but if you don't do those things,
right.
you forget them. But like Humantash and the things, and I used to love the knishes that Mama made. Oh, I just love it. And I don't know how to do it. And when you get a Jewish recipe book, it doesn't tell you like your mother made it. I can tell you that. They don't come out the same way. And, you know, then I just don't do it for myself, I don't do it, you know. And I think, you know, if my grandchildren had lived nearer me, that maybe I would have.
Sure.
I did try when they were in Cleveland. I did try one time making for Purim tegla, and the only person ate it was me, and I ate it all because nobody else liked it. So, you know, you have to be brought up, you know, it has to be like this little child that I had here today. You have to start early with everything.
See, your mother didn't cook from a recipe book or anything. No. She
from
her
I'd mother. Say, Mama, how much? Well, I used to stand around. I said, Mama, how much? Well, you just put this much in. And then you see. So things like that. But Mama made it. And she made it very fast, too. She could get things done so fast. And the kitchen was never a mess. Was always, that's one thing I learned, clean up right away as you go along, and it really does help. But I had, really, my mother was really, everybody thought so highly of her. She was really some lady. You know, I wonder if I had to do the things my mother did, whether I'd come on out on top like she did. And not only that, but you know, of course, I think it's a Jewish trait that education is promoted.
Yeah.
But it was more than education. I mean, who thought of giving a 7-year-old girl violin lessons? Did anybody ever think of that? My mother did. The teacher said she ought to take lessons. And so my mother started me. And
did she have any idea that it would turn out to be such a big part of your life?
No idea at all. But my sister was taking piano. This was part of
your whole education?
A whole education. It wasn't a frill like the legislature's thing, a frill of education. It was part of our education to do that. My father sang very beautifully. Never sang in a group or any place. Mama couldn't sing at all, but it was Mama that saw to it that we had the music. And my sister sang very well, too. But no, because when I graduated high school, of course, I'd been playing all these years. I studied with the one teacher in Wilmington, Miss Gillespie. I studied with her for 10 years in Wilmington. And then when I went to the conservatory, when I graduated high school, Mama said, now, you'll be a teacher like your sister, because my sister had gone to normal school. She didn't get to go to college, but she went to normal school. And I said, I don't want to be a teacher, because I thought of all, you know, teach, you have to do mathematics, arithmetic, and arithmetic was not my greatest subject. And I came from a family that, like, we'd go to market. I'd go to market with Mama on King Street, on Madison Street. And on King Street, I remember we used to carry these heavy baskets, and the marks of the basket would still be in our, and we'd go to a fruit stand, and before the man had it marked down on paper, my mother gave him the answer. You know, she was that good in rhythm. And everybody, except this one, I wasn't good in rhythm. So I said, I can't be a teacher. So I went to the conservatory and got a teacher's diploma. When I got my teacher's diploma, Mama said, you're a teacher. I said, I know, but this is different. You know, this was all together. This was something that I felt, you know, comfortable about. So, started teaching in like 22, and I've been teaching ever since. How many years is that? 22 from 78? 56. Yeah, 60. It seems to me like yesterday I started to teach again. And I played around town a lot, because there weren't many, especially not women players, you know, girl mm-hmm. players. And I played in churches a lot. I got a wonderful education by, you know, really learning about different religions because of playing and all. And Father Tucker out at St. Anthony's used to call me the Jewish Madonna, because I'd put on a veil when I went there.
Oh,
and the Presbyterian church, I'd wear a stiff border, you know, those mortarboard hats. And, of course, I used to play a lot for Christmas and Easter. That's my friend. Her grandmother was out there for a whole year and died at the Farmhurst.
Oh.
That's why the Bicker Home was started.
So then, okay.
That's why the Bicker Home was started. She thinks
Mrs.
Grandmother
was the first one
yes.
in there.
the first, I guess, older person, she got senile, and her mother, this friend's mother, was mm-hmm. taking care of her, and it was just, the doctor mm-hmm. says, you got to do something about it.
Yeah.
And the whole, everybody was very upset that a Jewish lady had to go out to foreigners. You know, they mm-hmm. were very upset about that. And so that's how the, and she thinks it was in about 1915 or 16, somewhere around there. So,
Did you ever volunteer out there?
Volunteer? I played out there.
I
played violin out there at Farnhurst.
No, I mean at the Big Hall.
No, I have a program here someplace where I conducted the choir, and then I have a nice letter. Oh, that was from the Jewish Federation, I think, or something, that I must have played or something. I have all that kind of stuff. I never did any anything other than the music mm-hmm. thing for that. But Mama, you know, contributed all, you know, other kind of services, like... And the women, they had great refreshments after the meeting. There might have been a hot argument at the meeting, but afterwards they had, these women would bring in cookies and cakes, and I mean, you can imagine, you know, everybody tried to outdo everybody else. They were terrific. So, it's nice growing up in a town all your life, really. But very few people grow up in the same town all their life now.
Yeah, I'm starting to realize that, how unusual that, you know, I went to the same schools all my life. And
it's very unusual.
And there's not that many of my friends. That
My grandchildren have, the oldest ones, you know, the twins that I told you about,
they've been all over.
They've lived in Sweden for 2 years. Mm-hmm. They've lived in New Jersey. They've lived... In Ohio, and they've changed so many schools, and you know, this place to them is like, you know, home, because mm-hmm. this is the one place it's the one place that hasn't moved around, you know, and so I'm very grateful that I can stay here, really grateful. We had to, my Uncle Jake built this home for us. My older niece was a little baby, and it was hot. And we were living at 624 West 2nd Street, and it was very hot, and she was crying. He said, we got to get her out in the country, see. So he bought this place in 1929, and there was just a little house here, and then he had this all built, and then about 25 years ago, that other part was built on. But he did it for us. And we just stayed out in the summertime for a long time, and then we finally moved it. We used to take the children to school all the time. We all went to different places. I don't know how we did it. We had one car, and we all went to a million places. Mm-hmm. I taught one place. My sister taught another place. My sister taught for a long time. She taught school for a long time.
Did your uncle get married?
Uncle Jake never married. Uncle Joe married, but his wife died in Texas, I think, in a flood, as I recall that. But Uncle Jake never married.
Do you think that the Jewish community in particular was more cohesive, and you had more of a feeling of community?
Absolutely, absolutely. We did, because, you know, you sat in back of the same people in temple or in front of them for years on end. You know, it's the same group that came. The Benheim sat in front of us. I forget who sat in back of us, but... it was, Charlie Topkis sat down front, Mrs. Ginz was there, the Snellenberg sat on the left. You know, I visualized all the thing. And, I think it was very cohesive. Because that was the whole life, I think, for the Jewish community. And, of course, Addis Kaddish had their own, And I can't remember where the grandpapa and grandmama. I do remember going one time to the Addis Kaddish for some services, you know, I don't know whether it was holidays or a regular service, and we had to sit up in the balcony because the women were separated up in the balcony and the men were downstairs. I can remember that, mm-hmm. sitting up in the balcony. Of course,
how old were you?
I don't remember. I has to be a little girl.
Yeah.
And
that must have been kind of a surprise for you to
it
have
was.
Separated like that.
Yes, and Grandpapa, I think, was blind toward the end, mm-hmm. and he was a great. You saw his picture. He was a very kind of interesting face, I think. I loved him a lot. They were always kind and gentle. And we had a lot of fun in our family. And, it's interesting. You know what I thought about the other day? It was dumb when they were announcing about the Panama Treaty, and they said in 22 years from now they'll, it's going to take over. Suddenly dawned on me, 22 years from now, I probably, I don't think I'll make 22 years from now. That's a long, that's when you're 75, 22 years. I don't know whether I want to do it unless I can still be teaching or doing something interesting. But isn't it funny that, because you think, you want to see all the events that are going to occur. And I thought, my gosh, I won't see that when that happens. Probably, I don't know. But, the community was very cohesive. And, in the beginning, I kind of remember, and I may not be exactly right on this, but see, the group broke away from our temple, and they didn't like some of the way things were going, and they started the Beth Shalom. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you this. When Grandpapa died, the Finger Boys came down every night to say Kaddish for Grandpapa. And I was such a little girl that I can remember we had an oak round table in the kitchen. Now, this was at, this had to be at Uncle Jake's house, Uncle Jake's store, and then the kitchen down, because it wasn't at our house, I'm sure. And they used to stand me up, the fingers, that was like Judge Finger and all those Finger Boys, they used to stand me up on that little, that round oak table, and I used to sing Ain Callahana for them. See? I remember that. Gosh, I had to be a little girl to be put up on a table. Yeah. But I can remember that. So, Jewishness was, just a natural part of our life. And yet, as I grew up, I played in all these churches. And my mother used to go with one of her Catholic friends to the church, to the service mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. And when I was in Baltimore, at the conservatory, every Sunday I went to a different church with some of my mm-hmm. friends, just to be aware. So I'm, there's never been like a ghetto feeling for us mm-hmm. because we had Gentile friends and Jewish friends, and as they say, some of my best friends are Gentile. My best friends are Jews, But anyway, it was that kind of a community where it wasn't a ghetto feeling, at least it wasn't in our household.
It was together, but it wasn't because you were forced to be
together. No.
It was because you wanted it.
And we were together because of the things that were necessarily Jewish, like the holidays and things like that, or what went on in the temple, or the bazaars, or things mm-hmm. like that. But as a community, of course, nobody tried to get in any country club. I don't know if they even had country clubs then. But, I remember when what was that Progress Club was started? That's in the early days. That had to be in, 1923. It was called the Progress Club. And I think my cousin Joe Barsky or Victor Barsky, either one, was the first president of it. I think Victor was. And it was over on 9th and Market, I think, the second floor or something. Rooms. And that was a social place. Mm-hmm. But that was a Jewish social place, the Progress Club it was called. And but our whole, I think that's why it's very easy for us to live in a community where there are all kinds of people and all kinds, because we were brought up that way. We weren't brought up that, you have to be Jewish to be just right, or to go to heaven, or to go to hell, wherever you go. I don't know where you go. But it wasn't that kind of a feeling at all. I don't know how we were, how we got this feeling, but we were aware that whoever had their own particular religion, that was good for them, and we should respect it. And we were never told about it. Mm-hmm. It was the way our parents just treated other people, I think, and the way we had people into the house and that sort of thing. But I think that's important, because everybody has to live together, you know? And I think everybody has to have sympathy or understanding. I won't say sympathy. I think people should have understanding for people's problems. But is that 10:45 there? Yeah, but that's all right. I don't have to be there at 11:30. I just got mixed up in the time. I have to teach this afternoon, too.
Do you remember ever getting any sort of feedback from your parents about, you know, why don't you get married instead of teaching this sort of thing and going to college? And did you feel it was unusual to go to college? You know, or did your parents just say, you're going, and
no.
You just sort of expected to go all along?
Well, my sister, I guess there wasn't money for my sister to go to college. She went to normal school.
But
I think it was expected that we were to go on with further education.
There was no question of, well, you're a girl, you shouldn't go, you should get married.
Not from my mother. I don't know, but I don't remember that, you know, I never heard it. Oh, no, no. Mm-mm. Isn't that interesting that you asked that, because I never thought about it before. You've asked me a lot of things that I never thought about before. It was just expected that we would bring out in ourselves the best there was in us, you know? And just to develop any ability you had. We were given the encouragement, and we were given the opportunities. As I say, you know, what mother's going to start a 7-year-old girl on violin, you know? We were given that opportunity. My sister was taking piano lessons. When I was in high school, we went to Kate McClafferty's dancing class with the white gloves and the bowing and the whole business, you know? And during the war, 1918, mm-hmm. we were about to move to Philadelphia then, and we were living at 94 West Street. We never did move to Philadelphia because my aunt died while we were there, and we just stayed right on. But it was a lovely house. It was right across from Grace Church, and it had a very large living room with parquet floor, with a long mirror, like a ball, you know, like a small ballroom. And we always had the soldiers and sailors from the Y that used to come to down at King Street. We had them, they came to the house, and I played fiddle, and somebody played piano, and they danced, or we had a Victrola that you had to crank up, you know, and our house was an open house, you know.
During the First World War?
Yeah,
they came to a Y? They had a Y there?
Sure, not Third and King.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
In 1919, I told you I found a dance program of mine in 1919. And I gave it to Tony. Mm-hmm. Now that dance, I don't think that dance could have been at the New Century Club or something, but it was the officers of the Young Men's Hebrew and Young Women's Hebrew Association. Mm-hmm. So, it was in existence a long time.
Oh.
You know, Third and King, second floor, third floor, I forget which was, second or third floor, Third and King. So that was that was our social life down there. That basketball games there, I don't remember the gym, but I remember basketball games, and we put on shows, and I would belong to the Campfire Girls, and I think we met down at the YWHA, and my cousin Eva Barsky was the leader in charge, and she never knew her left from the right. She would say, face left, and I used to say to her, you mean right. She never knew her left from her right. She was a lawyer, but she didn't know her left from her right.
Do you ever remember any of the the people your age ever trying to go out with non-Jewish boys or girls, and what was the parents, did anybody actually do it, or was it just understood that you didn't do it?
My mother was very, very upset, and I didn't realize why, because I was really very naive. But there was some, I even remember his name, now this is from 1918, a young soldier who came from like out the West or someplace, but he used to come to the Y, to the social things. Those people didn't have many places to go. And he sort of got a crush on me, and I was like 16. Mm-hmm. And he used to call me up every night and call me Miss Stella.
Gosh.
And I remember one time he walked me home from the Y, and I, as I say, I was very naive, but my mother was very, very upset. Yes, I think there was a big feeling.
You knew why she was upset, I mean.
I didn't.
Or you didn't?
I didn't really realize. Well, I had sort of an idea. Well, but I thought it was because I was young, and mm-hmm. She didn't want me to get that interested in anybody. And first of all, it was a soldier. We didn't know anything about him, where he came from. He was gone to overseas, any of that business. I don't know that it was because he was a non-Jew. But I have a feeling that that could have been part of it. I really do. I think there was not much intermarriage in the early days in Wilmington. And it was kind of a surprise, mm-hmm. No, I don't think there was that much intermarriage.
So if anybody did people pretty much stick to the people of their own religion, or did anybody actually try to go out with, say, non-Jews? Or was it just, they just didn't?
Of course, through my music. But see, I was very shy. I must tell you, I was very shy at 16. And I didn't, go out like girls do today at 16 into movies with a boy or anything like that. And my association was a lot with non-Jews because mm-hmm. through playing violin. Mm-hmm. And even in my work in school, there are not that many Jews in doing that kind of work. But I guess I never think about it. I think that I have pictures in there where I know with my sister's group, it was a big Jewish group, mm-hmm. They all went together. They really, I would say that in those early days that they did stick together as Jews. I really think so. But it didn't mean that they didn't have other friends.
They just understood that they were not to marry somebody.
Nobody ever spoke much about it, but you kind of had that feeling. But through the Y and through your temple,
you had
a big social life with Jews, mm-hmm. It's interesting. You're asking me questions that, I haven't really, thought about it for a long time. And when you're living through them, you don't really see, mm-hmm. you have to have a perspective to see. But I can remember my mother being, wasn't any great thing, and she didn't lecture me or anything, but I could see when I walked home with that soldier one night from the Y that she was a little upset. From her face, I could tell, but she never said anything to me about it.
Let me ask you one more question.
Sure.
I don't want to keep you.
It's all right.
During and previous to World War II, were you and people in the community, people in your family, aware of what was going on?
Now, what is this before?
Sorry.
Before?
Just prior to World War II.
Mm-hmm. That's in 45,
39.
39, all right. Now,
in the early 40s. Were you aware of what was happening to the Jews in Europe, what Hitler was doing? One of the things they mentioned in the Holocaust last night was that people, even if they knew, they wouldn't believe it. And they said that the people just didn't know about it because they wouldn't broadcast it, that sort of thing. Now, I know my grandmother remembers reading about it in the Jewish paper. She says that she knew. She might be mixing things up a little mm-hmm. bit because she tends to. Mm-hmm. But were you aware of what was going on?
I think we were aware with disbelief. I think we were aware, trying to think, this is Hitler's regime. you know, I know we were aware. I was just my friend, we were talking yesterday or the day before. She said she feels so guilty now because she was a young married woman with children. She was aware of what was going on. But it was like it was so far away that you couldn't believe, you know.
Yeah.
I think we didn't make enough protests, for sure. I think none of us made much protest about it, did we? I don't think so.
Do you think if the Jews here had protested then, that something more might have been done?
I wonder. I've often thought about that. But now it looks, and I was well aware because I remember going to play someplace. It's like a birthday party here in Arden. And this was like the 30s, you know, mm-hmm. when Hitler was in regime. And I walked in, and on their mantelpiece, they had a picture of Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, I almost died. And then I remember in another place, they were spouting the cause of Hitler, what wonderful things he was doing. And another lady there, who was not Jewish, said how pathetic it was that these little children were being sent from Europe by their parents, away from their parents, and they would have notes pinned on their addresses, where or on their slips, wear a certain dress with this, where these little notes were pinned. She said it was pathetic. So, see, I was very aware of it. And now it makes me feel, I think seeing the Holocaust, you know, makes it too real, you know, the whole business. But, and as I say, my brother-in-law's sister and husband were walked off, so we were aware of it. It was like, it was incredible. I don't know how else to say it. And then I guess we were immersed in the war
mm-hmm.
at that time.
Sure.
And I had two cousins killed in that war, one in 1918 and one in this one on D-Day. And so we were aware, I think, of our own sorrows. Don't you think so? I wish I could explain it because I feel kind of at loss because I can't go back that far in my mind to say what my actual feelings were at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I know there were meetings, you know, like at the Y, there'd be meetings, and I just can't remember. And I think, you know, everybody gave money to help and things like that, but
mm-hmm.
there was not that big outcry, like in Skokie, Illinois now. All right, now, so all the communities got together, Jews and non-Jews, and they had a big prayer meeting, and they don't want to have violence. I just saw it on TV.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to have violence, and they want to teach love instead of hate, like the Nazi group was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, people are speaking up more than they used to.
Yeah.
And I think Jews take more of a stand now than they used to. Not that they didn't feel it. Maybe it just seemed like hopeless to try to do anything. I don't really know. And I can't, it's a long time ago. I can't remember my feelings, you know.
How about after the war when the papers really just started publishing the pictures and everything, and there was no question in anybody's mind of what had happened. Was there a very, did Zionism, did everybody start feeling very Zionistic at
no.
that point?
I tell you,
of a big movement.
See, I'm not very, you know, I'm not a very brainy person. I'm not an intellectual person. I work hard at my music, and I've had a certain amount of success because I worked hard at it, you know. But I don't think I'm really an intellectual person. But, see, I'm born in America. What do I know of Israel? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's wonderful to have the land, and I give my money, and I buy my bonds, and I do everything for the people that want it. If I were given a choice, I'd say, no, I want to stay here, because what do I know? I only know America. You know,
mm-hmm.
I feel an American. So in our family, I don't remember any pronounced Zionism.
Mm-hmm.
Always supporting everything, you know, that we could. But, you know, I never had heard anybody say, let's all pack up and we'll go to Israel. I never had that feeling because America, my relatives and my mother and my father, they came from the pogrom of Russia mm-hmm. to the free land.
You don't remember any, how about within the community right after World War II, was there a great emphasis on, let's send our money, we have to, you know, really get these victims into Israel? Did they really emphasize that?
I think so.
So do you think that was maybe making up for, you know, as you said, you know, you maybe felt a little bit, that one, your friend felt somewhat guilty because, you know, she wasn't doing anything. Do you think that maybe people were trying to make up for not having done anything before getting people
into Israel? I think you always try to do that. You feel that maybe you haven't done your best at one part of your life, and you try to make up for it a little bit. I think so. I don't know. This thing has brought it all to life again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of knew about it, and you've suffered through it, but you went on living, and it kind of got pushed back in your mind. Now this thing brings it all together.